Today, I am going to do the first talk in a string of talks on a subject that I've had under wraps for a couple of years. This is something I've been working on literally for a couple of years. You know how on the internet we have our 40 Hebrew lessons that we call Hebrew Quest, available through holylanguage.com. Well, I do have other sets of lessons in process, and this is like a sneak peek at them. This is a talk I'm going to be doing about besties, about best friends. The Hebrew word for best friend is so deep, they usually take 4 or 5 words at least to translate it, to give like that full meaning. And it's quite profound. It tells us a lot about friendship, how to be a best friend, what kind of best friend you might want to have. And also, it has some deep things to tell us about our relationship with Yeshua the Messiah, who you could maybe say is our best friend. Well, I'm really excited to talk to you about this. This is what I'm going to do. I'm going to show you this Hebrew word, and then I'm going to show you how it pops up in different ways throughout the Hebrew Bible. Now, Hebrew is really neat. Almost all Hebrew words have a 3-letter root. And then those 3 letters take different forms depending on whether it's a noun or a verb or an adverb or an adjective or those kinds of words. What would that look like in English? Let's say you had the 3-letter root WRT. Let's say you had that 3-letter root in English. What verb would that be?
Write.
To write, that's correct. What would be a picture of writing? It's like if you're like doo 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 and you're writing away, right? Like that. That's writing. Okay, now even in English we have the verb write, but we also have a person who writes is a what? A writer, that's correct. If you have something that was written, you sometimes call it for instance, sometimes scripture, like something that's been scripted, is called writ. Sometimes the Bible is called holy writ, so something that's written is writ. So you can begin to hear how even in English we have that idea. But in Hebrew, it's much more systematic and it's much more consistent how that happens. So these 3 letters in Hebrew are the root letters for the Hebrew word for a bestie, a best friend. This here is the first letter in the Hebrew alphabet. It is the letter Aleph. Aleph. The next letter is the letter Lamed. And then the final letter is the letter Fe. Aleph, Lamed, Fe. And these 3 letters are the root for a friend. And they're also used for some other things. Now, this is something really cool about Hebrew. Hebrew is a very concrete language. Almost everything in Hebrew is related to like a physical action that you can do with your body, or it's related to a concrete thing. So when it comes to concepts in Hebrew, they're almost always tied to something concrete. You could call them concrete concepts. It's not like some abstract thing where you're like, what does that word mean? And it's like, well, it kind of has this feel. That's not the way Hebrew works. So, the concrete picture of a best friend in Hebrew, guess what it is? In English, you would say it's the first letter of the alphabet, the letter A. In Hebrew, your best friend is your letter A. So, the thing is, we're talking Hebrew here. So what's the first letter in the Hebrew alphabet? The first letter is Aleph. Now, if you have an English Bible, there's one place where you could probably see the letter Aleph. In Psalm 119, there is a set of 8 verses that starts with each letter in the Hebrew alphabet. So the first 8 verses all begin with the letter Aleph, and sometimes in some translations, like in the New American Standard Bible that I have, for instance, they have the letter Aleph, like written, A-L-E-P-H, and then it has a little Hebrew letter Aleph. So even in most English Bibles, if you look under Psalm 119, you may see that there. So that's what. So Aleph, number 1, is the first letter in the alphabet. Aleph, number 2, and we're going to. I'll count through these with you just to make sure that we get all of these little nuances. Aleph number 2 is a best friend, a bestie. In the book written by the prophet Micah, chapter 7, verse 5, it says this. I'll read it to you in Hebrew and translate. And I want you to listen to the Hebrew word aloof. Because aloof is one of the forms that this word takes. And it means bestie. Al ta'aminu v'reya. It means, don't trust in a neighbor. Don't trust in reya, neighbor or friend. Al tivtechu b'aluf. That means, don't have confidence in a, here they translate it as, friend. Mishochevet chekecha, from the one who lies in your bosom, against your chest. Shmo pitche ficha. Guard your lips. So there's this thing. Of course, it's like in the context of something Micah was written about, right? It doesn't mean that you apply this to every situation across board, because it sounds pretty jaded, doesn't it? Don't trust in your neighbor. Don't have confidence in a friend. From her who lies in your bosom, guard your lips. It's like, you're going to be a pretty antisocial person if you just take that one verse out of context and run with it. But the main thing here that I want us to get is the Hebrew word for a best friend here is aloof. Everybody say aloof. Yes. So I would, how would I spell that in English letters? Probably A-L-U-F. Aloof. A-L-U-F or maybe A-L-U-P-H. But that looks a little bit funny. So I think I like A-L-U-F better. Now, the interesting thing is, the English word aloof actually means something. What does the English word aloof mean? It actually means the opposite of being a best friend. It means to be distant. It means, often, well, it's used in the phrase to hold yourself aloof. So in that case, it means to be distant, to be reserved, to stay away from someone to a certain degree. So that's how you can remember this word, okay? When you think of, if you want to remember the Hebrew word for best friend, just think it's the opposite of staying aloof from someone. it's being the closest to that person. Now, this Hebrew word aloof, which means best, your best friend or your bestie, it's used in several other places in the scriptures, and in each of these places it has a slightly different nuance that helps us understand friendship better. And that's where we're going to go here. This word is also used, aloof, in the book of Tehillim, Psalms 55:13. If you have an English Bible, it'll be 55:13. Like a Christian Bible? If you have a Jewish Bible, it'll be 55:14. Just to make your life a little harder. And here, this is what it says. For it is not an enemy who reproaches me, then I could bear it. Nor is it one who hates me, who has exalted himself against me, then I could hide myself from him. But it is you, a man my equal, my companion, and my familiar friend. And I'll read that last line, but it is you part. In Hebrew it says, Vata, and you, Enosh Ke'elki. It's like a mortal man, like my equal, in terms of my my measurement. Alufi, Umyudai. So Alufi here, if you want to say my in Hebrew, you put an E on the end, right? So if you want to say my van, you'd say vani. If you wanted to say my wife, you'd say wifey. to use that form in English. So here, if you want to say my best friend, my bestie, you'd say alufi. Alufi. So here he says it's you. Alufi, my best friend. Umyudai. And the root for that last term there, just because it's grouped with these other words and it'll help us understand, the root of it is the Hebrew verb yada, and it means to know someone. It's actually the first time it's used, it has the context of knowing someone sexually. Umyudai, it's like knowing someone very closely, intimately. Not necessarily always sexually, but that's the idea of the word. Now, this is interesting. This term in this psalm, alufi, the translators had a hard time with this one. When you look it up in different translations, there's quite a wide spectrum of words used to render it. Why? Because in Hebrew, it goes back to this picture of the first letter in the alphabet. And in English, like that, just you just totally miss that concrete concept. So, for instance, in the New American Standard Bible, this word is translated, alufi is translated, my companion. In a lot of the old English Bibles, like the King James Version, the Douay Rheims, and the Bishop's Versions, it's translated, guide. Alufi is translated, my guide. In Darby's translation, it's rendered, mein intimate. And in the Good News Bible, they translate it, my colleague. So can you hear how there are quite a few different renderings of this word? You'll notice here that a lot of the older translations render this word guide, and I think that's a good word, a better term that would be used today, and a term that is suggested by Jewish thinkers and Jewish people that have the best feel for Hebrew is mentor. They would say alufi in this context is best understood as my mentor. If you actually read the context of this psalm, it's David talking about Ahithophel, who is a counselor of his, a great genius actually, a man that David leaned on for political advice. And Ahithophel backstabbed him when David's son Absalom rebelled and staged an attempted coup against David. Ahithophel defected to young Absalom, and that was the context of this. So when you look at the figure of Ahithophel and the role that he played in David's life, it definitely has the context of a mentor. Ahithophel was something of a mentor to David HaMelech, King David. All right. So the first usage of this word is the first letter of the alphabet. Number two is a best friend. Number three is a mentor. All right. Number four, this word is used to mean leader. In the book of Bereshit, Genesis, chapter 36, verse 19, it reads this in Hebrew. Ele v'nei Esav. These are the sons of Esau. Ve'ele aluf ehem. And these are their chiefs. Hu Edom. This is Edom. I like the old King James word. Instead of saying the chiefs of Edom, it calls them the dukes of Edom. I just think the dukes of Edom sounds really cool. So here, aluf ehem means their alufs. And then it lists a number of tribal chieftains, or leaders of clans in the nation of Edom. So in Genesis 36:19, aluf means a leader, a chieftain, a duke. All right? That is the, what was that, number four?
Yeah.
Yes, that was the fourth nuance of this word. Number five, in the book of Mishle, or Proverbs, chapter 2, verse 17, it's a warning. It's a warning against a slutty woman, against a wife that is not faithful to her husband. She runs around behind his back. And it basically says, wisdom will do this for you. And then it says, to deliver you from the strange woman, from the adulteress, who flatters with her words, that leaves the companion of her youth and forgets the covenant of her God. And in Hebrew, it describes her as ha'ozevet, the one who leaves, aluf noreha. That's like the aluf of her youth. Aluf noreha, ve'et brit, and the covenant, eloheha, of her Elohim, her God, shachecha, she forgets. So here, a woman's husband is described as the aluf of her youth. It's translated in the New American Standard Bible as the companion of her youth. So the fifth nuance of this word is it can be a reference to a spouse, to a marriage partner, to a husband or wife. Your aluf, if you're married, is your spouse. That's the fifth meaning of aluf. The sixth meaning of aluf, and this is the final one, is it's a verb. You may have noticed that so far, aluf, aleph is a letter, it's a thingy, and then these other usages of the word aluf, they're all nouns, a friend thingy. Here, the sixth meaning is alaf, spelled with these same three letters. To alaf, in the sense of a verb, means to teach. In the book of Eov, Job, chapter 33, verse 33, Elihu, the young guy, has listened to these older men go round and round and round, and finally he just can't take it anymore, and he feels like he's going to blow up. So he starts talking, and it takes him a couple chapters to get it all out. And one of the things he says is, "Pay attention, Job. Listen to me. Keep silent and let me speak. Then if you have anything to say, answer me. Speak, for I desire to justify you. If not, listen to me, keep silent, and I will teach you wisdom. In Hebrew, that last phrase he says, im ein, like if you don't have anything to say, ata shma li, you, listen to me. You know the verb shma, to listen, like shma Yisrael, right? Shma li, listen to me. Hacharesh, like be silent. Va'alefcha, and there you can hear that verb, va'alefcha. He said, be like shma, like listen, hacharesh, be quiet, and I will alaf you, I will teach you chokhmah, wisdom. So that's the sixth and final nuance of this Hebrew word for a best friend. It's the root of it is to teach. So those are them's the stark facts. That's the word. That's how it's used in the Hebrew scriptures. Those are some of the nuances that it carries. I'm just going to pose some questions now, and I'm just going to let us sit quietly for a couple moments and think about the questions, and then we can share some of our contemplations if we want to. The idea is I just want to give you this, and then I want to think about it with you. I don't just have a big teaching I'm going to whack you over the head with or whatever. I just want us to feel this out together, and I want us, for each one of us, to feel out, how does this apply to me? What does this understanding have to teach me about friendship on a personal level? And just to review, let's see if we can remember the six meanings of this three-letter Hebrew root. The first one is the first letter of the Hebrew alphabet. And actually, maybe we'll start by asking this question: What does that mean to you? Like the first letter of the alphabet. What's the connotation that carries? What are some words that come up in your mind when you think of how the first letter of the alphabet is a picture of a best friend, of a very close companion? I agree. When I think of the first letter of the alphabet, even it, like just to say like you're my an A type friend or you're my A friend, it's like you're like in English, I guess we have the concept of grade A, like number one, top of the list. Yeah, it's like to me the word that comes to mind is priority. If someone is like a letter A or a level A friend to you, it means they are top priority. Like you had mentioned, they're at the top of your list. I think the best way to determine what our priorities are is to simply look at how we spend our time. If let's say that we have several demands on our time, the thing that you give your time to is probably your top priority, the most important thing to you. It is your A item. Or if there are a number of people that have invited you to different events, the person that you go with to their thing is probably your A person. So those are some things that come to my mind when I think about that. So the other words in Hebrew for your best friend have the connotations of mentor, leader, spouse, and a teacher, someone who teaches. So here's a question I'll ask, and we can just think about it for a couple moments before we share. What does this Hebrew word, aloof, teach us about friendship? Like what a friend is, what a friend does? Yeah, I mean, it's pretty simple. Basically, this word and the different connotations that it has in Hebrew, it tells us that your friends mentor and guide you to some degree. Your friends influence and lead you. And likewise, as a friend, it will happen. It's inevitable that you will, to some degree, mentor and guide your friends. To some degree, you will influence and lead your friends. And that may be for better, or that may be for worse. But that always happens in a relationship. And it's usually two-way. You're usually influenced by each other. You're guided, mentored. Let's say if you're going through a tough time and you're like, you know, I'm going through a tough time, this is the situation. Very often, you know, if they're a good friend, they'll just empathize with you and say, oh, oh, you know, I hear you, I'm feeling with you. And if they're a male, then they'll try and solve your problem for you, right? No, I'm just kidding. But but so that's kind of the that's pretty simple. But that's what one of the things that this Hebrew word teaches us. Here's another question for us to think about: how intentional are you about who your closest friends are, your best friends? Well, let's just stop and think about that for a minute. Well, that leads me to my next question, actually. Here's another question for us to think about for a minute. How do you decide who's in your inner circle? When I ask myself how I decide who's in my inner circle, I think generally people that I want to be influenced by, or people that I would like to influence, are the people that I let into my inner circle. I've sometimes noticed that the people I like the most are the people that are most like me. Like, people who are like me, I'm like, that person is so cool. And perhaps that's narcissistic, but I think often the people that I allow into my inner circle are the people that I have similarities with, common interests with, that I like because they're like me. Those are some thoughts that come into my mind when I stop and ask myself that question. A practical application we could take away from these questions is just to choose your closest friends, choose your inner circle carefully based on who you want to become and where you want to go in life. The neat thing is, like, just like our friends influence us and to some degree will lead us, guide us, mentor us, that's what we are to our friends too. When you think about that, like, the people in your life, the people that you're friends with, that's what you automatically do in their lives. Like, we mentioned that term mentoring. So here's a question to stop and think about for a minute, and I'd love to hear your definition of this word. Like, what in your mind does a mentor do? I like that. Accountability in a specific direction. That's definitely something that a mentor offers. When I think of what a mentor does, the three things that came to my mind were a mentor helps people grow, helps you grow. A mentor helps you clarify your dreams. And a mentor helps you meet your goals. Very often your goals are based on your dreams. So identifying what your dream is, helping you to talk through that and to clarify it, and then setting goals to reach that, to see that dream come true, and then just taking those practical steps, step by step, to see that dream come true. I think that's very at the center of what I think a mentor does. So a mentor, to some degree, is a friend, but it's like a big friend, something that's definitely more than just a friend. And often someone that you look up to a certain degree, or someone who has already gone there. Perhaps you have a similar dream with your mentor, or a similar set of goals, and if your mentor has taken steps towards that, then they can help you on that path. But here's the thing, that's what a friend is. That's what a friend can be. That is what a friend typically should do. Like, in a healthy friendship, you're going to experience that. Not in the sense of being patronized, not in the sense of, like, someone always taking, sometimes sociologists talk about how often in a relationship one person is the parent type and the other is the child type. Like, one person is more the teacher and the initiator and the one that maybe feels like more has the authority, and the other person is more the go along, the listener, the impressionable one. You know, I'm not saying that in a friendship one person always takes the parent role and the other the child role, sociologically speaking, but definitely there is that back and forth where both people are mentoring each other. So with that in mind, here is a practical application that we can take away from this talk. And I dare you to do this. Ask your friends what areas they want to grow in and how you could help with that. That's what a mentor does. How do you want to grow? I want to help you get there. That's the first thing you can ask your friends. The second thing you can ask your friends is what their dreams are. And often in a friendship, you don't don't go there soon, which is fine. But sometimes in a friendship, you don't even think to go there. Sometimes you just take the other person for granted that you know everything about them. But a person's dreams are often something that they hold very near and dear to their hearts. And sometimes a person's dream is something that they guard very closely. But if you actually care enough to ask a friend, what's your dream? What are some of your dreams? Your wildest dreams? Usually they'll tell you. And so that's the second thing as a friend mentor that you can ask. The third thing you can ask along those lines is ask what their goals are and how they plan to reach those goals. And then as an aloof, you can encourage them every time you see them in those things. You can cheer them on. And you can also ask how it's going with their goals, how it's going with the steps they're taking to meet those goals. You can see how when you take that approach, you're suddenly becoming a very valuable friend. You're becoming a fantastic friend because you're not just sucking the life out of them. You're not just draining their energy. You're not just using that other person to make you feel good. You're coming to them and you're saying, like, how do you want to grow? How can I help you with that? What are your dreams? I believe in you. I believe in those dreams with you. What are your goals? How are you going to reach those goals? I'm going to be that person that's a sounding board that asks you how that's going. So that when you get off track, when you get discouraged, when whatever the case may be, I'll be that mentor kind of friend that helps you get back on track, that helps get you encouraged again, that keeps you going with that. I mean, really, like, who in this world wouldn't want a friend like that? And this whole feel, like this idea of how a friend mentors a friend, it's wrapped up in the Hebrew word aloof. Here's another practical application we can take away from this talk. If you're a husband or a wife, don't take your partner for granted. It's so easy to take each other for granted as the years go by. You just kind of get comfortable. You quit asking the questions you began asking when you were first getting acquainted. You just kind of assume you know all that stuff. But people change over time, and it's good to stay in touch. It's good to regularly ask those deep questions just to take a sounding. So if you are married, more than anybody else, you can help your partner grow. You can help your partner clarify his or her dreams, and you can help your partner set goals and work towards them. Either that, or you can do a lot to stifle your partner's growth. You can do a lot to kill your partner's heart and blow their dreams up or shoot them down. You can do a lot to distract your partner or dissuade your partner from setting goals and then working towards them. It cuts both ways. It's that whole thing about you're a friend in the sense of influencing a person, in the sense of mentoring, either for better or for worse, right? And that's especially true in a marriage. So a very practical application I would suggest is if you're married, regularly, maybe even just once a week, you know, if you go on a weekly date or something, regularly ask your partner, how do you want to grow? How can I help you grow? What are your dreams? I believe in those. What are your goals? How are you working towards those goals? How is that going? Those are great questions to ask a spouse. And their questions, I mean, if you were to interview your average couple, and to ask, like, how many times do you ask your spouse that kind of question? My guess is most of us just don't think to ask questions like that in a marriage. But questions are so powerful. Questions are like the springboard. Questions are like the first step in a new path. And so let's turn over a new leaf for some of us. Let's turn over a new leaf. Let's write those questions down on a paper and stick it on our wall in our office or in our bedroom to remind us. Or write it in a document and put it on your desktop, whatever it takes. And just remember to ask your partner those questions, let's say once a week during a date or something like this. I guarantee you it'll improve your quality, the quality of your friendship. It will make you a better friend. So those are some questions that I have for us about friendship and how we can be a better friend. I also want to ask a couple questions about what this Hebrew letter Aleph and this Hebrew root that means a best friend and some other things, what it has to show us about Yeshua of Nazareth. Because we're disciples of Yeshua of Nazareth. And for us, you know, when we study the scriptures, when we learn the Hebrew language, it's all about Him. It's all about following Him. It's all about knowing Him better. We happen to be in a covenant relationship as disciples with our Rabbi Yeshua, in which, guess what? He is our aluf in every sense of the word, in the fullest and deepest meanings of the word. He is your aluf. He's my aluf. So the question is, what does this Hebrew word tell us about who Yeshua is to us and what He does in our lives? So I just pose that question to you, and let's just stop and think about that for a moment. This Hebrew word aluf and what it means. What does it tell you about who Yeshua is to you and what He does in your life? That's fantastic. Here's a related question for us to think about and discuss also. How does this Hebrew word tell us about who Yeshua wants to be to the people of Israel, Am Yisrael, and what he wants to do for the nation of Israel, for the Jewish people? I think it's somewhat tragic, but for many of us, we've been most hurt by our friends. For some reason, it's like the more familiar you get with someone, the more prone you are to be yourself in a bad way. It's like the Jekyll and Hyde concept almost, where often like our ugliest side comes out with the people that we're closest with. Often it's not our enemies that hurt us most deeply, it's our friends. Many of us have experienced betrayal, being backstabbed, being let down or failed by a friend, having the feeling that you're giving 100% in a friendship and the other person's only giving 50%. I'm sure we've all had those feelings. And so to finish this talk on a high note, I think it's wonderful that Yeshua of Nazareth is alive from the dead, and that He offers every person in this world, including every Jewish person, like we'd mentioned, a relationship with Him in which He wants to be your aluf. He wants to be your best friend, your closest companion, a person who's there to mentor you, to help you realize your dreams, to help you set those goals and then achieve them, to help you grow spiritually, grow mentally and emotionally. Like really, that Yeshua is there for us in that regard. And yes, when we answer His call, when we follow Him, we do need to let things go. We do need to make sacrifices. He even talked about how following Him is the equivalent of picking up your cross that you're going to be brutally executed on, and then going out to the place of execution. Like when you say yes to Him, stuff has to die, and it is painful. It's not like He's just like a life coach that just comes in and just makes your life better. There's definitely a point where like it's not like He just comes to us, but we come to Him, right? So I'm not minimizing that at all, but I do find it so meaningful that Yeshua loves every human being. And very often the desires in our hearts and our dreams are things from God. And Yeshua wants to help make those things come true in our lives. And sometimes I think when we say yes to Him, He makes them come true in ways that we could never imagine. Maybe ways bigger than we could ever imagine, or just in a way that looks totally different than we could ever imagine. So he's there as a mentor. He's there as a leader. Yeshua is not just like a bestie, a best friend. He is so much more than that. He is a king in every sense of the word. We often don't have a very good feel for the absolute authority that a king held and holds, because we live in a country that doesn't have that notion anymore. You know, when you live in a democratic system, you often lose that feel. But Yeshua is a king. In the truest sense of the word, He has authority. Like just to see His majesty would rivet you. It would be the most memorable thing you could ever imagine. Like He is so majestic. He wields such great power. He's a potentate, and in that regard, He offers His leadership. He offers to be the chief of your tribe. He is in fact the chieftain of a tribe, and we can join his tribe as Talmidim, disciples. Yeshua even offers a relationship that's on that close level that married partners have with each other. Like your married partner knows you better than anybody else. And that's what we can have with him. He knows us on that level, and we can know him on that level. He wants to be alufim with us. You know, there's even this image in the scriptures of us as Yeshua's disciples having the same relationship with him that a bride has with the groom. Like they're so enthralled with each other. They're so taken up with each other. They're so in love with each other. Like they like being with each other. There's no one they would rather be with more. And that's the relationship that we can have with Yeshua. And how does that work? It works because he's alive from the dead. He's out there somewhere, maybe closer than what you would suspect at first. He's there, and he offers a relationship with each of us in which it's like he breathes right into you. Just like God took some clay at the beginning and he sculpted this human body, and it had no consciousness. It had no life of its own. And then he went, and he breathed into it and it came alive. That's what Yeshua does for us. He breathes his spirit into us. Like his most inner essence, what he is, that's what he breathes into you. And you experience this inner union with him. You experience this closeness with him that physical partners could never have. And that is how it works. Because we're not just physical beings. We're not just like animals. We're human beings with a soul. We're spiritual entities. Like something deep inside of us is spiritual. Our consciousness is spiritual. And we interface with the spiritual world through our spirits. And so that's how it happens. Yeshua is there. Yeshua is alive. Yeshua gives you his spirit. And then through his spirit, bringing your spirit to life, through you experiencing that union with him inwardly, you're able to know him. You're able to see him for who he is. You're able to hear his voice. You're able to know his thoughts. You know, when you spend a lot of time with someone, you sometimes get to that point where you literally finish each other's sentences. It's like that. Coming to know him like that. That's what Yeshua offers us, that he could be our aluf, and that we could also, and this is mind-blowing, that we could be his alufs also.
Shalom, I'm Izzy Avraham, and thank you for joining me for this talk. I delivered these messages live during the years I was leading a congregation. They're now hosted by my Hebrew school, Holy Language Institute, at holylanguage.com. If you're interested in the talks I've done since then, or if you'd just like to say thank you for these teachings, become a member at holylanguage.com.